Hey everyone, welcome to Fighting the Dragon.
If you like this episode or any other and you want to support us, you can check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/bwgcast. Anything you help us out with there, it's just awesome and helps us keep making the best possible show for you. I am Tommy Arnold.
And I'm Mike Epstein.
And you're listening to Black, White, Gray.
So we talk about mindset in painting a lot, and I had this sort of this epiphany, I guess you could say, recently. There's all these things in art that you'll hear at one point or another, and there's a piece of advice you get
that you're not ready for.
Yeah, and you think you are, or like, and you and
no, I'm just laughing because I had a really dark one of those the other day.
I had
heard somebody say something like years ago, and I remember being like, that doesn't apply to me. And then recently it came to my ass.
Yeah.
What were you going to, sorry.
I mean, pretty much just that. Like, you know, there's often these sort of pieces of advice that we'll either not understand until later, or we'll come to a new understanding of because we're at a different point in our lives and our careers.
Yeah.
So the idea of like attacking something 100%, like going into a piece 100%. I had this like monkey touch monolith moment when I was like playing a video game. I was playing Monster Hunter. Not important why, but
he loves that game.
I do. But you know, there's this really, really hard fight in there that like I hadn't been able to do for like the longest time. So I came back to it after several months and I was getting ready to try it again, and I was in this new mindset of just being like mentally loaded for bear. Like in terms of like the actual in-game preparations, I wasn't doing that much different. Other than, like, I was prepared for it to be difficult, I anticipated the difficulties, and I moved into it with, like, this absolute blazing determination to actually to get through it.
Having those specific call-outs about what difficulties you expected to encounter, were you also... Did you kind of have plans for how to counter those difficulties?
Not specifically.
That was
the interesting thing. I mean, that was sort of what helped me isolate this more than anything. Because
you didn't do that much different except try.
Yeah. The short version is I went in and I beat it in what for me was like a record time.
Yeah. And that was the first time you'd ever beat it.
Yeah. And it almost seemed like it wasn't easy, but it's the kind of thing like I was like in it so much mentally and I was like fighting so hard, and when I won, it almost came as a surprise to me because I was like dug in like a tick, ready for this to like this be this huge arduous thing.
Yeah,
and
you found that just by like leveraging all of your mind for a shorter period of time, you're able to defeat it more quickly.
Exactly, and so this fighting the dragon has sort of become this like mantra for me over the last month.
Was it a dragon?
It was.
Okay.
Yeah, big old spiky dragon.
That was context I didn't have before.
But it's just become this sort of mantra for me over the last month or so because I've found that like. On my best days of painting, I'm approaching art with that mindset. I'm not fearful. I'm not, like, anticipating failure, but I'm, like, going in just, like, mentally loaded for bear.
Yeah, just really, really,
like,
really there.
Yeah, fully engaging in something.
It's funny, because you can almost not know how much you can engage with something until it really matters to you.
Mm-hmm.
You really do sort of naturally turn up the wavelength or whatever. I mean,
yeah.
It's funny, because I had a discussion like this with a student recently where... The student was making really good work, but it was kind of falling short over and over again. And yeah, he brought me this piece, and he kind of asked if it was done. And I retorted, you know, do you not know if it's done? And he just said, no, I don't know when they're done. I just stop at some point. And I was kind of like shocked because it was like, well, you're like giving this your all, right? And not to anyone's like discredit. I'm trying really hard. What do you think? And I was like, well, do you think there's any issues with it? And he was like, and then he went on and he told me this long list of things that he thought kind of could use some work. And I was like, well, then why are you showing me this right now?
Yeah.
And
because then it's not done.
Yeah. And I understood we all want to get opinions on stuff, but it wasn't presented in the context of like, what do you think about this? It's still in progress. It was like, I am done. What do you think?
Yeah.
But then to say I am done and yet you know there's issues, I kind of was able to isolate in that moment because it had been a bit of a schism for he and I for a little while where I wasn't really understanding. And what I realized is that the term to try is really rather nebulous in society, even because there's so many different types of, you know, physically You can do all the right things with your body and not learn the lesson.
Yeah.
You can do all the color studies and not learn color. You can draw all the figure studies and not learn about anatomy or figures.
Yeah.
Holistic figure drawing. And
you can read a book and not take in, really, like, analyze,
absorb it.
What's in,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because how on you are, this 100% thing, is really, and it's even when you know that there is such a thing as being on 100%, it's hard to stay there. And
it is.
Science has actually shown that it's an incredibly difficult state to achieve and maintain, especially. So, like,
yeah.
In Peak, Anders Ericsson basically gives everyone a break, and he's like, look, of everyone I've studied, world-class violinists, pianists, soccer players, artists, anyone that I've talked to, no one seems to be able to maintain this state for more than an hour. Even if they practice for 4 to 5 hours a day, they do it in discrete one-hour chunks because...
And they work up to that. Like, they don't start...
Oh, no, yeah. He was like, you know, if you can start with 30 minutes once a day, you're doing better than most people who will never turn this on at all during the course of a day. And modern life is basically designed to keep you from having to turn this on, right? Things are kind of bubble wrapped in a way where we're protected from having to really try our hardest.
Could you elaborate on that?
And think about the number of things in your life that are automatic. Like, everything's not on the line. You know, like, with driving, there's certain types of rules in place that everyone can follow. So you can kind of drive and listen to music and blah, 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 blah,
oh,
blah.
Oh, I see.
But have you ever been driving through, like, a hailstorm and you found you had to switch off the radio?
Yeah.
There was something about the radio that felt so scary at that point because you knew you needed all of you, right? That's when you were driving with 100% of you.
Driving up to Washington in complete whiteout conditions.
Yeah, but there's no reason to put yourself in these 100% conditions in most cases because it's dangerous, right? Most of these types of things, like, it's the reason that the Top Gun school was invented in the Navy was that you couldn't push pilots to their limits because they would just die.
Yeah.
So, and it's... it's...
And I would say it's a good thing that so many things in our life
are like that. I actually think it is true.
Yeah, that lets you focus because you can't give 100% to everything.
No. Of course, like we just said, you can only give 100% for if you've been practicing it a few hours a day, maybe.
To one thing.
Yeah, and I find that when other things in my life go up in flux, I can't give 100% to art anymore. So when I look back on chunks of my art in periods of time, like, oh, that's the 3 months where I was moving. Everything feels kind of samey. It's stuff I had done before, right? Because at that point, I'm falling back on my habits and just...
Yeah.
Relapsing into what I know how to do easily, like driving. You know, I'm just coasting in the right-hand lane, not trying to pass, not trying to do anything too aggressive, just like easily coasting into where I need to get because at, you know, during the rest of the day, I'm like, oh, where are the ladles? Where I got to get everything in the same box. The movers are going to be here, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's all this other stuff. And I don't know, the driving thing just came to my mind because the other night I had one of those moments where I had to switch off the radio. So that's just kind of like the hair trigger example I can think of. But there do seem to be a lot of things like that are... And we're actually kind of rewarded, right? Like, it's seen as, like, such a great thing to put aside a little money for your, like, retirement here and there. But, like, we're given that message by the people who are making money off retirement accounts. So there's all kinds of things where, like, you can, like, kind of feel like you're doing it without doing it.
Yeah. Especially in commercial art where, you know, sort of the establishment of a routine is critical.
Yeah, because you have to hit a certain minimum threshold of quality.
You have to hit minimum threshold of quality. It has to be sustainable, which... rewards and in some cases necessitates that sort of homeostasis.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that was why I sort of found this, again, like this phrase fighting the dragon sort of became this mantra for me because with all the factors both in and outside of art that sort of force you towards and reward going through the motions.
Repetition.
Yeah, this was sort of a way for me to sort of remind me of this particular mindset, this particular phenomenon with all of like the different things that are packaged in it and sort of like a sleeper agent, like activate it.
Yeah, just wake you up.
Yeah. Like, you had something like that a while back too, right?
I keep an art journal, but I keep it online basically. It's password protected, so only I can get to it. But having it online enables me to do a number of things like tag search through it and things like that. And then like, you know, when you make any website, it's got like a name, right? So the name of this particular website is just attack.
And oh, okay, yeah.
That word for a long time was really critical to me. In fact, there was a period where this mindset was so important to be able to activate because a lot of other things were sort of in turmoil at that time that I could... Basically, every morning when I woke up, I had a little to-do list, and the very first thing was, like, say attack. I would literally make myself say it out loud. I would just say it, like, in this really loud, sort of aggressive voice and, like, kind of go, like, sort of, like, flex and just be like, attack! And then I would, like, you know, it seemed, like, dumb, but I was just there alone, so it wasn't enough to see. But it really, like, sort of, like, Manchurian candidate, I was just like, all right, I'm here now. Let's do this. Like, and it would remind me. It even works to now, like, sometimes if I'm having a bad day, I'll be like having trouble getting out of bed, and my fiance will just come in the room and flip on the lights and go, "Attack!" And then she'll just walk, out of the room. And I mean, I swear to God, it works. I'm just like, oh yeah, I have like things to be doing. Like, I can't be laying around here feeling bad. Like, I need to just get up and do the routines and get to work.
Yeah. And that's what I found so interesting, that like this mantra was sort of able to encapsulate a lot of these complicated ideas and describe this mindset
to you very quickly.
Very quickly and specifically.
Yeah. It's almost like you're telling it yourself in like binary or something. This is the shortest way to say this to yourself.
Yeah. And I'm still experimenting with in different ways, but I tried it out while sketching. Every time I start to like experience like a distraction or I start to get stressed about it, I'll just sort of envision it like almost like externalizing the difficulty as just this thing that I'm fighting.
Yeah. Well, also, and with a sketch especially, I think it's good to point out that the big burst of exertion is at the beginning, right? So what's nice is that this stuff can kind of come and go in waves. Like we were saying, how you can't maintain it for that long.
Yeah.
Maybe it only takes 15 or 20 minutes of fighting the dragon to get the bare bones of the sketch solved. Then you can kind of relax as you poke things around for a minute, kind of settle the big masses. And then you can kind of fight again where you go, okay, now I'm going to fight the figure. And you just bang, knock out the figure. Then you spend 20 or 30 minutes cleaning up little highlights or doing whatever you need to do, whatever your sketch process entails. You're just, you know, moving things around and then like, okay, I'm going to fight the environment now. And then, because it is really tough to maintain. So you need this almost like pulsing sort of energy application where you're on and then you kind of slowly drift down and you're on and then you slowly drift down.
Yeah.
That's the only way to make it so that it's kind of the illusion of sustaining that mindset over the course of a day, but you really need these. And I think with, traditional painters, I've noticed a lot of times mixing is that recharge time. So I'll see they'll lay down an area really aggressively, and then they'll kind of just not look at the painting for a while, mix up all the new colors. They're comparing things on palettes, but they're kind of doing that like a machine. You know, if they could make a machine mix their palette, they probably would. But this chop-chop sort of like, you know, mixing up these paints and laying it all out really cleanly and neatly, these just kind of like doing chores at home, right? You can use those times to decompress and prepare for the next sort of burst.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of this as sort of like this. It is just like deliberate practice. You really can't maintain it
for
that
absolutely.
Long. But you can strategically apply it at like the most critical
points. Yeah, and that's part of the reason I think it was probably good that you actually beat that dragon or whatever quicker. Because if it had dragged on, you probably would have lost focus. And that's a chance where you can slip up and lose the game.
Yeah.
Or what have you. And you know, we've been talking a lot about game theory and game strategy as it applies to different elements of art recently. But that's, you know, like we talked about stealing a game. Well, the dragon could have literally stolen the game from you, where it's, you know, you've been playing so well and then kind of just run out of energy and slip up.
And that can happen in a sketch. Like if you've been staring at it too long, you start to lose objectivity and like things that you had conviction about at the beginning, you start to second guess and double check things.
And then it can all kind of crumble, right?
Yeah.
You can kind of just watch something really solid dissolve before your eyes, and then you kind of convince yourself you don't know what you're doing, and
it can
really get out of control. So there's a lot to be said for this, like, assassin mentality that, you know, and again, Brian had talked to us about that really early, right? He talked about how commercial artists are really like assassins in some ways, where it's like,
I thought he just meant that they take money for their services, but
yeah,
maybe
but
there was more to
it.
Isn't
it interesting how these words that come back, like you realize, oh, maybe for him that has a deeper meaning.
Yeah. I wonder if that was sort of like his like Manchurian candidate.
Exactly.
Word.
Like we all have these different keywords that encapsulate bigger ideas for us. And that maybe for him that's sort of like get in and just cut its throat and get out, you know, this.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of people who've been making art for a long, long time. Their process gets more and more direct, where it really is just about you get in, you fight, you leave, and that more time is spent on planning and preparing for that fight or doing whatever is needed to take care of the body the rest of the time. But that I can't think of many illustrators who are a little further along that I think that they have this really laborious style. I mean, even people who've been in the field like 20 or 30 years that are making, you know, really sophisticated, what we would think of as realist work, they've found, if you look at the paint up close, they're constantly chopping away dead wood and finding ways to sort of make the same type of stuff more quickly, more efficiently. And part of that's probably just that art is boring. It's really boring to sit
there
and
make.
There are
long stretches, too.
Yeah, but there doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
And again, fighting the dragon probably reduced that, because if you can really stay in that mindset, you'll sort of obsess over what's critical.
Yeah, and that was sort of why this phrase, like, you know, your attack, my fighting the dragon, it was interesting to me because, you know, people talk about like inspiration or motivation, but for anyone doing art, and I think particularly anyone doing art commercially, like it's like that old like Jack London saying, like, you can't wait for inspiration to strike, you have to go after it with a club. There, you know, there'd be some days where there would just be like the right confluence of events that would get me into this mindset, and that would be great, and I'd feel great on those days.
Yeah.
And there'd be other days where the stars didn't align and I wouldn't feel like that.
Yeah, you kind of can't wait to feel great when your job is to wake up and feel great about making art every day.
And like, For very practical reasons, I just can't wait on that. And so it was really exciting to find something that's like able to sort of hack my brain into doing this very specific thing.
Those days when you feel like you just see the universe.
Yeah.
See the Matrix. Oh my God, if I just say 10110, I'm Superman for the rest of the day. Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually kind of realized, like, as we were talking about this, that when I was younger, there was this thing that my parents would say about me, which is that, you know, I was not, I always played soccer for most of my childhood, and I was never that good, but I played a lot, but it's often because I wasn't really there, right? I played a lot of other games that I cared more about, like Magic the Gathering and things like that, that I would, you know, while I was on the field, I'd be like thinking about the next Magic tournament or something like that, just the stuff I cared about more. And so even though I was there physically going through the motions, like we talked about, I just never really got any better at soccer. I just kind of did the same stuff, just enough to get by. Whatever, you know, like, I don't even think I ever played varsity. Like, I played JV for almost all of high school. It was pathetic. And but one thing that would happen is whenever we got into a really tough game, the competition would get to a certain point where normally I would, you know, we talk about kind of like the panic zone, the learning zone, whatever. Actually, normally when things got to the point that most people on the team were panicking, where we really were getting like our rear ends handed to us, we'd go, I would just like really turn on all of a sudden, and just like that was what snapped me into playing. And it wasn't, there's no different skills, right? I'm still the same player, but I was just trying my hardest, which it sounds so ridiculous to say that you know you're not trying your hardest, but
I think the problem, you said earlier that there's a nebulous quality to the word trying. And I think when we talk about trying your hardest, it's sort of a problematic term because there's this inherent judgment involved in it. And so no one is going to
admit they're not
trying their hardest.
But I will clear. But in hindsight, it's easy to say, well, back then I wasn't really trying. Now I know how to try. But no one wants to admit that right now they're not trying.
Right. And also to like really get into that and say specifically what does trying entail in this case?
Yeah.
Because going through the motions can feel like trying.
It absolutely can. And that's the thing, especially if it's something that you see as arduous.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, I'm here and I don't even want to be. Well, that is probably a really good sign that you're not trying.
Yeah.
Because if something is really interesting and mentally engaging to you, because that's the thing, is that when a game of soccer got really difficult where my team actually needed me to play for us to win, it was interesting all of a sudden because there was something on the line. It's almost like you have to practice in a way where something is on the line. I want to say one more thing about that, so before I like continue that little train of thought, which is just that what my parents would say about me is that I played up really well. They would say, you always play for the competition. If the game is too hard, you'll like step up.
Yeah.
And I was always really proud of that, which is so the wrong message to take away, because what I realize now is that I could try my hardest anytime I please. I just didn't, right? I just wasn't interested in soccer. But with other things like Magic, I was always trying my hardest because I cared so much about winning. And that mindset, when I switched over from really focusing on Magic to focusing on artwork later in my life, that conviction that, like, okay, the thing I'm most interested in, I will pour 100% of myself into. I'm always thinking about it.
Yeah.
I'm always working on it. Mentally, I'm always grinding on this. And then when I sit down to do it, that's like my blood sport, right? Like, I always used to think of going to figure drawing as like going to the arena. I was like, oh, we're going to play. I would spend all day getting like psyched up. And then I would go and you draw your hardest for 2 hours. And I remember I was always tired after that.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a reason we would go out to dinner after that and just like, just shoot the shit, because I was exhausted. I mean, everyone was, right? Because if you're really playing at that level, it's you, like we said, you just can't keep it up. And figure drawing is kind of designed where it's like, okay, pose over, change the page, change the page. You don't get those breaks like we were talking about, where you don't really get to mix your palette. You know, you're working in the quickest medium, something like charcoal, on the tightest deadline, 2 to 5 minutes, and you're just doing over and over and over, which is what makes it great practice. But there's no rest. So you're totally burned out after that.
When we talk about sort of this mentality coming and going and be able to maintain it, and like the importance of having something where you can do this on command. It's like you were saying, like, you know, you're not dependent on the other team or the situation. Like, really, to me, like, the ideal is being able to sort of initiate this mindset whenever I want. That's why I found this so interesting. But there was, there's another side to this that I wanted to talk about. And this happens in life. This happens in art. It was actually that same game. It was like that same fight in that game that gave me this secondary realization like a week later. I went back into it. And I had done it a few times with this mindset. And over time,
Did you always win?
Up until then, I had.
So you won. You were unable to beat this fight. You started thinking of it a new way, and you beat the fight several times.
Yeah, and I tried it again, and I just got my butt kicked, like just absolutely like thrashed. And I realized what was happening is that the confidence that had come from the success of this mindset led me to lose that mindset. And so one thing.
Oh man!
And you know, it can happen.
That's rough.
Yeah. And so
that absolutely happens.
Yeah. And it can happen in art. It can happen in almost anything. Like we get complacent. God.
Yeah.
And
but, so a lot of people you'll see say something like, you know, I feel like every time I sit down, I have to relearn how to paint.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing. Like,
and so that's what I wanted to ask you about. Like how, cause you know, complacency can't happen without achievement first.
Yeah. Or at least perceived achievement. I definitely see people who get locked in a loop where like they can't see that their art isn't hitting a certain bar of quality and they don't have anyone who will really tell them. So they make a piece of art and they think it's good and then they do another one and then they're kind of missing that critical feedback.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to.
No. It happens in like a lot of aspects of our careers. Like I can only speak for myself, but I know I'm not the only one. Like when we get like a job with a client we've wanted for a long time, like that first job, like everything goes out the window. Like we're just pouring 100% into it.
Yeah.
And
hype jobs.
Yeah.
Think of those as hype jobs.
Okay.
When there's big hype for me on the inside, like this needs to be awesome. You know it right up front. You're like, it's going to be amazing. And I've looked back and I think we were actually talking about this the other day while we were painting that like, I can look back at every piece that I'm still willing to show on the internet and remember that that was a piece I was excited about before it existed.
Mm.
And almost every one that I knew was going to be compromised. I knew the client was going to be trouble. I knew I was sick. If there was anything wrong up front, it came out on the back end.
Yeah.
It's like a direct light tunnel that just goes from what you bring in to what you put out, and you can really see. I mean, there's been a few that they just sort of slipped through the cracks where I remember I was excited, but I don't really remember trying that hard. It's like but those are just happy acts. I mean, got lucky when that happens. You can't count on that.
And do you think like complacency can come in there? Like, have there ever been times where like you were so sure you were going to do a good job that you didn't?
No.
Okay.
No, I can't think of a single time like that. It doesn't go the other way.
That's telling, though.
Yeah, I don't think... No, it's always been... And a lot of times you'll try to cover, right? We all kind of have, like, a vocabulary of solutions we use for illustration. So I'll you know, typically be quite happy with something that's kind of like a really interesting dynamic pose that I can handle really realistically. Somewhere in the middle ground, you know, maybe they're aligning with the environment or lack thereof in some kind of way that's interesting or promotes their like power or fluidity, something like that. But like, I have this other, completely other Tommy Arnold that lives inside me that's like, we really like to use lasso tool and abstraction. And I realize that guy only shows up when I know I can't do it the other way.
Mm.
So I've got this like plan B guy who can crack it, but in a way I'll never really be happy with.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I know I'm not coming to play once I've resorted to using that guy. That guy can, like, fool the client. He can fool some other people, but he can't really fool me because I kind of know he's my B-list guy.
Yeah.
Now, recently I had this piece I painted where I just decided, what if I painted like that with my A-list brain?
Mm.
I was like, you know, these are all real skills. These are just different tools than I normally use. But there's no reason that when I use these tools, I have to forfeit the match. That's what I would basically do is forfeit the match before I even showed up.
So you had those skills tied into habits.
They were tied into a specific idea about how I would play and that I would not play to win in the same way.
Yeah.
So this idea that I could attack a painting just as viciously with this different tool set, you know, the painting came out in a way that was objectively good and again was kind of a surprise, like what you were saying.
Yeah.
It was a surprise because, well, first of all, I wasn't even sure if it was good because it was so unlike. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to use my common receptors to judge myself. I couldn't look at it and be like, okay, well, you know, it's smooth in these areas and it's working. I have like a place where my eye can rest. This is all, you know, fine, because the painting was kind of designed to promote unrest of the eye in a way that would make it move around more. And it was, I don't know. I mean, it was just like kind of junky in ways, but then there was something really beautiful about that too, where it was junky with purpose. It wasn't like I was trying to make defects in it or anything. It was like we were saying, you just got in there, cut its throat, and left. And then whatever was spilled on the ground by accident was just there. And I didn't clean it up, you know. That was after we had been talking about that Phil Hale podcast I listened to.
Oh, okay.
He was talking about not going in and cleaning up the painting just as a rule. And the podcaster asked him, I think this was on Yoshino's podcast. Yoshino said, you know, was that really difficult to do? And he said, no. it was super easy. You just make the rule. Once you've made a rule for yourself, it's really easy to follow because you know you made the rule. There was a good reason for the rule. As long as you're obeying the rule, all is well.
Yeah.
Now, it's uncomfortable maybe, but it's easy. So that was how it felt. But it was just interesting to see that even certain tools I had sort of written off as like, if I have to lean on lasso tool too much in the painting process, this is... I'm looking for an out. I'm looking for something to add visual interest because I can't do it the way I'd like. I can't solve it with the skills I have. And, you know, so then just resorting to this other sort of thing.
And then so bringing those tools over into this attack mentality is sort of the answer to it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that painting came out, it was like a 2-day painting.
Yeah. Maybe then these mantras, just there's something to remind you of that mentality, like a trigger for it, is the solution to complacency.
Yeah, but the problem is you'll even become, just to talk about homeostasis for a moment, because I think that plays into this a lot. The body wants to establish a natural rhythm with everything going on inside of it and outside of it so that it can be on autopilot almost all the time. If the body can do that, it will, right? And so same thing with like weight training, right? If you lift the same weights all the time, you don't actually get stronger. You have to constantly up the weight.
Right.
Now, it's really easy to go in and keep a chart where you're like, okay, every day I'll up the weight. But with painting... Even though I had that word in like huge bold letters at the top of the journal that I read at the beginning every morning, eventually I just didn't see it.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't see it anymore. My body had just adapted to that catchphrase in a way where it just didn't care anymore. Mm-hmm. And so someone else had to say it to me, or I had to accidentally see it somehow to be reminded of it. So, I mean, literally I was like flirting with the idea of just tattooing it on like my hand or something. And I had the same thought. I was like, you know, I'll just become inured to it where I don't see it anymore. So, I think this is where community comes in. You know, we talk a lot about how we just want to talk about things that we ourselves want to be reminded of later on this podcast.
Absolutely.
That, you know, I wish that like someone would just call me on the phone and be like, hey, you know, you're supposed to attack, right? Every day. I'll be like, oh my God, thanks, man. I really appreciate that. And then hang up. But that doesn't happen. But I mean, maybe in the studio we could have some sort of policy like that for each other, but I don't.
Yeah.
We're often not here at the exact same times. So when you need that trigger, I'm not here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that brings up an interesting idea. So there's the trigger itself. There's thinking of, there's making a point to consciously think of it.
Yeah.
Like, do you still wake up and physically say attack?
No, that's the thing. It just slipped.
Yeah.
Like at some point, something changed in my life where I moved or something else that upset general homeostasis and that pattern just got forgotten.
Yeah.
And I really didn't remember it until like a few days ago.
There's other things like, again, just sort of brainstorming ways to avoid this mindset becoming self-defeating, where the victories it generates will beget complacency.
Yeah, there's some ways to put the hooks in the activity. So Schmid has this thing in A la Prima where he says, you know, never intentionally leave anything wrong on the canvas.
Right.
And I think that...
Like what you're saying to your student.
Yeah, and that and the word squint he sort of has like written on his actual easel. So that as he's judging the painting, he almost can't help but see those words. But also, it's kind of a reminder because as soon as you go to leave an area incorrect, hopefully you would remember, I'm not supposed to do that, and then you just fix it. It's like this self-correction mechanism because we're inherently lazy. Everyone's lazy. So we have to find ways to work with or defeat our own laziness to kind of be able to do this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different elements at play there that we won't get into here. But, I mean, if there was any way to embed the trigger early in the activity...
Yeah.
I don't know what that would be.
There are some things I think that are sort of, we're fortunate because I feel like they're endemic to commercial art, and particularly narrative art that I've noticed recently. We've talked before, I don't know if you've done it on the podcast, about doing the thing in capital letters.
Yeah. Like, we call it, is the painting doing the thing?
Yeah. So like if you're called upon to paint like a wizard conjuring fire, if that's what the piece is about,
but
you're not
the,
just
but
gonna
the piece
show,
seems to say something else.
Right. You know, just like putting every single, not just like the visual technical focal point, but like the theme, the story, like bending everything towards that one purpose.
Yeah, towards that idea. Even the hand gestures. What hand gestures do we associate with sort of like raising fire or like heightening? You know, if you take away, because there's certain types of body language that are just natural to certain types of activities, right? Like there's that sort of famous example that blind runners will still raise both their hands above their head in victory when they cross the finish line. So there's things like that where, you know, we sort of, over time, as fantasy becomes more and more common in sort of pop culture, I think we've got this series of understandings of how does a wizard move their hand to shoot lightning versus how do they move it to gather fire, or how do they move it to dispel illusion? You know, there's these kind of things that we're a little bit used to seeing. And a lot of people, what they really want to do is defy the convention. But you have to defy the convention while playing on some other convention. So if what if the convention you're defying is, you know, this is a totally new way that the wizard would shoot fire, then everything else in the painting has to be about it and has to cement some other preconceived notion we'll understand to make it seem more like that's what's going on. So
yeah,
there's a lot of, you know, we kind of want to avoid the obvious sometimes a little too much, I think, and something that can really help is to just go, okay, what's the obvious cues here? You know, if he's shooting fire, what's he, is he gritting his teeth? Does he look angry? You know,
yeah,
he's probably not super calm. Now, if the weird thing is that he's calm while shooting fire, then everything else, again, he's being...
We need to, and otherwise, it would be in sort of this uncanny valley area.
Exactly.
Where, like, your intention isn't clear.
Yeah, yeah. And so it has to be super duper clear.
I was actually talking to a student about that the other night, where it's like, you know, if you want to stylize anatomy, then make sure you do it 100% so we know that, like, this is definitely stylized and not just misdrawn.
Yeah, yeah. There's a consistency issue there.
But I bring that up, like, about doing the thing with relation to this idea, because... In narrative art, I feel like we have an opportunity to do that, where every assignment is different to one way or another. It's theoretically always a different story, or at least a different take on a different story. And so I was working on a sketch for a cover the other day, and I was fortunate in that case to have been working on a really good book, so it helped. But by completely throwing myself into the scene, like just pouring everything into it, it was sort of, because every single cover we do is different, and if we do the thing on every single cover or card or whatever, it defies routine and homeostasis.
Yeah, because you're saying the exact cocktail of ingredients is going to be different every time.
Right.
If you're trying to do justice to the ultimate sort of mixture of those ingredients, that in itself sort of begets a full presence.
It should
you
be
really
theoretically
be
like a new challenge to some extent.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Like, you
I
know,
think...
it's sort of like what you're saying with the soccer. Like, this is like playing a different team every time.
Yeah, well, I don't know if that's the case, because I played a different team crappily every time.
And
with that...
Then we're back to that danger again.
Yeah, exactly. And with that example, you know, it comes back to, did I care or not? Right?
Yeah.
And it's so weird how, over time, as we talk about this stuff, we realize that a lot of really common tropey things that get said actually have a really good reason to get said, but that without understanding the reason, those things kind of can seem rather trite.
Yeah.
So,
and that's absolutely one of the things that I think we both want to talk about in this podcast, is sort of like taking these bits of advice, like doing, quote, studies or trying or practice.
Breaking them down.
And it's like, what does this actually entail? How do you make this actionable? So that, yeah, there are sort of a lot of these common axioms.
Yeah, things
that come from a real place, but it's not until you have some, like, weird dragon-fueled epiphany later on that you actually understand how to fully apply it in an actual practical way.
But you just have to care. You know, and we can't govern what we care about. So that's kind of what I was going to say is, I tend to rely on my sort of rote solutions when the book is uninteresting.
Yeah.
Now, the only times where that has gone the other way is sometimes a book or a story is so bad that I just dig in myself and go, I have to come up with something to make this seem cool. Because my job to make it seem cool, and it's not cool.
Yeah.
Now, I don't really like the disingenuousness of that, but I'm getting paid for a job which is to make it seem cool. So what do I know about that's cool that's even vaguely related to this?
Yeah.
And I think one of the best things I've ever heard to activate that mindset is on Sam Weber's podcast. He was talking about a workshop he gave in Korea, where he was telling the students about how you have to be absolutely selfish with illustration to succeed.
Mm.
And I think over time I've come to associate those two concepts. So being selfish, being the willingness to discard all that which you feel is not cool in order to do that what you think is cool. Because when you're doing what you think is cool or what you really like, you will bring 100%. That's kind of what we talked about. So in a way, as long as you're actually genuinely excited about what you get to draw and paint, it'll just turn you on. You'll be all the way turned on.
Yeah.
You'll be fighting the dragon or whatever, you know, you're attacking, whatever keywords you use for this, playing up, you know, or like locking in. I've heard people say you're locked in, that kind of stuff. It'll bring it, you know.
Yeah.
You'll bring that if you really care. And so sometimes, I mean, and that's another really good point in the favor of only showing the type of work you want to do. A lot of us are like, well, I don't really paint vampires, but vampires are hot right now, so like I'm going to have a vampire in my portfolio.
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to care that much about that vampire. The client's going to see it and go, this is 80% cool vampire, and hire you because they need someone. And then you're going to make another 80 or watered down another to 20% or whatever, another bad vampire, and like, you need to just strip all that out. I mean, if you don't like something that you're saying, you know, anything you've got out there on the internet, you know, we kind of think of these, a lot of people seem to think of their, like, website as a gallery where my fans can come and bask in my art. And nobody does that. That's just not a thing. So if someone wants to bask in your art, I'm sure they'll find it. They'll find a way. But you know, the website for a commercial illustrator is really to get hired, right? So you don't want to show anything that you're not eager to paint, because you'll just make more bad stuff. And really, long-term quality and having a little bit of a niche, those two things are going to suit you so much better.
And an issue will naturally emerge from the things that
the things you care about. Yeah.
Because those are the things that let you activate that 100% mindset.
Yeah, which will, again, so it's a positive cycle.
Yeah.
So maybe that is kind of the cracked code, is just to only really do
what you
know fanatically
yourself,
care about.
You know. And also, like, that was a really interesting idea that brought me over to this other aspect of this mentality that I wanted to talk about. You know, you talked about when a book was or an assignment was so uninteresting that you had to just sort of like come up with something despite that.
Yeah, it's almost like you had to throw it away.
Yeah. And there's this other aspect I was thinking about while I was driving, of this again, this whole fighting the dragon mantra, that, you know, there are times when like an assignment is really uninteresting or difficult, or like I'm having, you know, worries about, like, you know, my career, or like comparing myself to other artists. And a lot of times for myself and for a lot of people I've talked to, that can become sort of this nebulous weight. Even though there are objective solutions to all these things, it can actually generate this feeling of helplessness.
Mm.
And I had one of these moments recently, and I approached it through the lens of this like fighting the dragon mentality. And this really interesting thing happened where I was sort of able to like externalize.
Is this something where you can get into the specifics of what exactly?
Yeah. No, I was just thinking about, I was just like tallying up, you know, like finances for this year and like, you know, looking at like health insurance or something. They just, you know, just got me thinking about like, oh, you know, I want to get X or Y jobs next year. But I don't know if I can do that, man. Am I good enough for that? Or like I had this personal project that I've been sort of like working on recently, and I had, you know, doubts about it, where it's like, I don't know if this Kickstarter would actually work. Just sort of these general nebulous doubts, which have very clear solutions, which is usually just do the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
but for me, and again, for a lot of the people I've talked to, that can just lead to this general like malaise. But approaching with this mentality of fighting the dragon, it took all these doubts and all these worries and sort of externalized it. And it turned this feeling of despair into this feeling of like righteous fury, like this feeling of defiance. And so I don't know if this relates necessarily to like attacking that problem with 100%, which I guess it does, but it was something that really interesting about this one particular catchphrase that I found applies to so many different things.
Well, yeah, especially for you, it's like an encoded message.
Yeah.
And maybe someone else's would be different, but yeah, that's really, I mean, I don't think that's not related, because, I've noticed a real trend that in students, one of the clearest, predictors of how far they'll eventually go seems to be how inspired they get by their own failure.
Mm.
So some students, when you tell them what's wrong with it, they're like, oh yeah, well I'll fix that and fix these other, like, look how far I can take it, you know, using your feedback, but also kind of in spite of it, or like, you know, can I basically beat your feedback, you know, thinking of everything almost in this adversarial capacity, which can beget some other dangerous mindsets. Like it can be a little dangerous to be too adversarial, but competitive is a different word for that. Maybe that doesn't have the same negative connotations, where if you can really think of everything as like this competitive game where it's like, you know, oh, you're probably just not good enough to get work with Marvel. Oh yeah, well, I'm going to get amazing to show you. I'm going to show you, and that becomes like this fire for you. Whereas some people,
it was this fire.
Yeah,
when you tell them of like this, like screw you, I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or I'm going to solve these problems in this particular way.
Yeah, and that can show up with so many different problems. Like, and again, I think playing Magic a lot really competitively when I was younger really helped me with this. Having this competitive mindset about just about everything, so that when I switched over to art, I was able to make progress a little more quickly than I probably should have been able to, just because I was bringing these types of really like solution oriented, aggressive sort of thoughts into it. And, you know, I don't know how that's seen by whoever on the outside, but I know it's really helpful to me to see things in that light. And so it's interesting that you know, with that situation for you, the same thing was able to happen.
Yeah, it's a mindset that, you know, I've been able to sort of move in and out of at different points in the past. But again, a lot of those things were sort of situational, or they weren't entirely internal to me. And so it was really interesting to me to find this thing that will let me like trigger that mentality on command.
Yeah, it also comes down to like, I've noticed that this mentality is harder to achieve the less confidence you have to back it up, right? Mm. So there's an interesting interplay there, because what you were saying that a lot of times these same types of thoughts of like defeatism and stuff, rather than rallying, going, no, I'm going to show you, a lot of times we can just give in, right? And
yeah.
I've had a lot of experience with that lately because of what's going on with my wrist and stuff. There were some things that I just couldn't, where I thought, no, I'll show you. And then that actually hurt me a lot because the way to fight this particular thing, which is tendonitis, was to not fight, you know?
Yeah.
Like what I finally had to do was go, no, I'll show you. I'll rest even longer.
Yeah.
I'll sleep 9 hours a night. I'll drink 30 gallons of water. Like, so it can kind of play in there, but it was dangerous for a while because if you misdirect that aggressive energy or competitive energy, you can really do damage, which is really how it got so hurt in the first place. It's just my reticence to sort of relinquish any painting. You know, I just wanted to paint. I wanted to find a solution where I could paint. All I did was dig myself deeper and deeper into this hole where I just couldn't paint at all.
Yeah, it's interesting because a few minutes ago we talked about doing the thing and all these parallels between art and life, and it's sort of identifying the thing that you have to do 100% and correctly identifying.
Yeah, and really doing it. And it can really be tough because a lot of times the thing you really need to do is not like what you've done before. So
yeah.
That's when I was talking about that painting I did, that it came out in a way where I wasn't even sure I could judge its quality. I had to just not look at it for a few days and then come back and be like, oh yeah, it's totally fine.
Yeah.
Because when you're in the painting, you're like fighting this area, fighting that area. Blah. Once you forget all those fights and you come back, all you have is that snap impression. Oh, do I like this or not? And
yeah.
Somehow, also working on it for less time let me forget the fights more easily. It was like they just washed through.
Yeah.
And then when I came back, I wasn't like, ah, that finger still bothers me. I couldn't remember anything about what I'd been thinking on during the painting. It was just a flash.
Yeah.
And that was really kind of fresh and nice.
Because you were entirely in the moment when you were painting.
Well, yeah, but not only that, but the moment was so much shorter.
Yeah.
There wasn't time to form this lasting impression of, oh, I'll always hate the values on that cape or
something. Yeah, and there wasn't time for the painting to steal the game, to use it.
Yeah, exactly. Where I would eventually give in to the despair. Because that, as we're finding that early on in both our careers, I think we found ways to use willpower combined with time and process to overcome lapses in skill. Right?
Oh, I know. I've certainly done that.
Yeah,
I've constructed entire processes that are just sort of like mechanisms
of
that allow me to go through the motions and just do it a lot
for a long time,
and then eventually by like firing enough shotgun bursts at the painting, something will stick into something hireable.
Yeah, which again is no way to learn, right? Because
you're
talking about that leaves you with no feedback. So
And it's exhausting in a totally different way because it just requires more time of you, even though the time is less productive, which leads to fewer feelings of satisfaction. Like you don't get as much of a reward in the habit loop of working.
And you're also not getting any better.
Yeah.
So you're building a life where you're gonna stay that way.
Yeah.
And that's what really eventually got so scary, is especially after the tendonitis hit, I just went, wow, I can't keep doing this.
Yeah.
I can't keep doing this to myself because I'm doing something to myself in order to achieve victory in the game. I had found a way to unconventionally win the game, but that had unforeseen consequences as well. So, you know, you're like beating the game by default in this autopilot-y sort of way where you then go, oh, wow, but, you know, maybe I actually need to put in this hard work to learn and do the specific. And of course, there's a lot of learned skills in there too, but relying on these specific things to overcome gaps in knowledge that just take tens of years to learn.
Yeah.
And
just no substitute for
and you need
what
money,
you know.
Right? You need money. So at a certain point, it's like, am I going to play the game in this kind of corrupt way for a little while to get by, or am I going to stick to my guns and starve? Well, that's not a choice. You have to.
But in some ways, it's almost, it is weirdly like self-defeating because, I mean, I'll be perfectly honest. There's a point earlier this year where work had come in for me for a long time and it started to fall off.
Mm.
And
yeah, I remember
looking that. Looking back, after, you know, I'm still working on solving a lot of the problems that beget that, but looking back at it from a much better point now, like, there was...
You missed a critical chance to say begat instead
begat. Yeah, there we go. But, you know, my work was becoming this sort of amplified version of itself, where it was becoming... Yeah, I was entirely beholden to the formula. I was just focused on finishing the job and getting paid.
Yeah.
And it led to a fairly, I think, vacuous period of painting for me.
And a pretty
dark
place.
Which is hard to, it's hard to say on the air.
A dark place psychologically,
yeah.
too. And we've both been in that place where, you know, the way you interact with work has more to do with, like, fear than it does to do with
absolutely
enjoyment. And
yeah.
again, maybe that all circles back to the kind of, like, we both had periods where we missed, either because you got focused more on money or something else in your life, whatever the case. I know for me, it was when I started to really focus on how much money I can make out of some of this stuff. And then quality just really fell off because, and not because of the relationship you would think, but because it meant that I wasn't fully there in the same way, you know, for each, because like you said, the goal, winning the, so there's this interesting thing we've been talking about where it's like, you know, fighting the dragon or winning the game, right? Like if you're playing to win, you have a win condition in mind. So if your win condition is make the best painting possible, that will lead to a different battle strategy than if your win condition is get paid.
Yeah, or just get it done.
And weirdly, it hurts more to try and get paid. Somehow, it's just way more excruciating. And it's interesting, I was rereading this little passage from Robert Henry's The Art Spirit earlier, and he had this great line in there where he just said, you know, I really think it's much harder to do a bad painting than it is to do an easy one. And that just blew my mind. Because you have to read that with the emphasis on the right words. Because he's not talking about how difficult it is. He's talking about how internally taxing it is. He's saying it's really hard on you, as a person, to make a bad painting. And all the things that go into making a bad painting, what if you just kind of let yourself? It sounds so corny. Again, a lot of these things come down to these kind of like axiom sort of statements that are like, ah, I've heard that a million times. Just let yourself succeed or something like that. But it really was, he was just saying like, making a good painting is so much easier. And again, going back to the Phil Hale thing that you were talking about, well, if the point of the game is to make an excellent painting, that's a whole nother thing. But Phil Hale was talking about when he first switched over to direct painting, he had to really change his willingness to make a bad painting. It's like, I had to make bad paintings for a long time because you're practicing a new skill now. Yeah. So the paintings just aren't going to come out as good. And we don't always...
He had a different win condition. His win condition was learned.
Yeah, totally. But I think if your win condition is learn over time, the win condition of like, beat this job, make a good painting, will become much easier. Whereas play it the other way, it's just about beat this job, you will not get better. Like we were saying, we both had done this for a period of time where you're playing the game in a way that does not increase your skill. Therefore, the game is always going to be as hard and arduous as it is for you right now. And that's sort of unconscionable.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and like you said, it leads to like a bad place mentally.
It's burnout. When you hear illustrators talk about burning out, this is what happens. You get into some sort of spiral where finishing jobs is more important, and then just you're done. As soon as that switch is flipped, you're done.
Yeah. Now, having been aware of some of this stuff, I'm still very much at the beginning of the road to making these changes in my life and in my work and fixing all this. But even making a couple of these changes and just doing one or two paintings based on these principles has radically changed how I think the work comes out,
the output,
how I feel about it,
how
the work is received.
And what's interesting is even when that happens and there's a mistake in the piece, I find I'm now much more willing to accept the mistake because I don't look at the mistake as the painting is more about what you know, not what you've done. And so when I used to see a mistake, I would be like, that's a missed note in the performance. You know, I know how to play this concerto, but I just happened to miss that note at the time. Now I can never take it back. It's on the recording for all time. But now, if I make a mistake, because the paintings are based more on my knowledge, I just look at it as like, well, that's understandable. I didn't know that yet.
Yeah.
And then I'll just go, okay, I'll add it to my list. I have a little running list of like, what have I struggled with in a painting recently? Oh, draped
fabric.
That's
a really good idea.
Okay, so I need to study that. So I just ordered a book on how to draw fabric the other day or whatever that I'll introduce into my study regimen. And then like, oh, you know, hands in specific positions or specific positions, especially where they're gripping. Okay, well, that's, you know, add that to or whatever, little things like this. So it's easier to forgive oneself with this mindset as well, because you just you can't already know everything, but somehow focusing on the performance instead of the practice makes you think you should. Like, you should be able to nail every note.
Yeah. And I think that's...
It's kind of arrogant, too, really.
That's one really interesting thing that literally just occurred to me. To sort of, like, tie this all back into the beginning. When I talked about, like, fighting the dragon, like, went into that fight. Before, I would go into it, and I would be looking specifically at, like, the end of it. Like, the victory that I didn't know whether or not I was going to be able to achieve.
Mm.
When I went into it with this different mindset, I was focusing entirely on the fight.
Mm. So, like, each individual moment of the fight?
I almost, like, wasn't thinking specifically about, am I or am I not going to win? It was just going to be about doing the best I could at each individual moment. And I noticed that when I was working on a sketch, I have a big tendency when I'm working on sketches to sort of stress out if I can't immediately see the path to victory.
Or see that it's already victory.
Exactly. But the other day, approaching a sketch for a cover with this mindset, I was able to focus on the thing. I was able to focus on like the moment of the story, the emotion of the character, and compare that to other times where I haven't approached it like that. One is entirely based on this nebulous result with no particular way to get there and all the problems that entails. The other is just going into each individual moment of that 100% and trusting that that will lead to the best result possible that you are able to produce.
Yeah, incremental.
Yeah.
Focusing on incremental victories rather than
sort of
total victory, I guess. Because, and again, in art, you're never going to make a piece that doesn't have any mistakes, right? There, because the canvas is you. Like, this is something we've talked about on and off, but it really sounds kind of hokey, but the the paint is really a recording medium, almost like a microphone for your whole body and everything you know and think. And it just ends up in the paint. People who are far more experienced than you or me at painting can look at our paintings and go, I see that right here you didn't really know what you were doing. Or I see right here you were scared. Right here you're not frustrated with your painting. And I can look at other students' work and say that to them. And they give you this look like, how could you know?
Yeah.
But it's your...
Muad'Dib.
Yeah. But you really can because you've made those types of marks. And so you know what they mean.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they really reveal themselves to those who can speak the language. And so... unless you're perfect, you're not going to make a perfect painting. There's just no such thing. So kind of letting go of that idea has been really significant as to see the way forward where it's...
Yeah, the idea that like giving it your all does not have to equal perfectionism.
Exactly.
In fact, that they might actually be polar opposites in terms of the results they produce and the mindsets that they produce.
Yeah, because ironically, you're saying you were able to achieve victory when you did not think of victory. What you thought of was fighting.
Yeah.
Which is... You fight for victory, but victory cannot be your goal.
Yeah. That's really. What I'm saying. Like, the victory almost came as a surprise.
Yeah, yeah. Because you were just like, I beat this little moment. Yeah. I beat this little moment. I dodged this little attack. And then all of a sudden, just, oh my gosh, the thing is dead.
Yeah.
I assume is how it went.
Yeah.
I don't know that game. I don't know that game at all.
But yeah. Well, and the same thing happened in the sketch. You know, I was just sort of like solving one part at a time, like going back and reading through this cool part from the story.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, it was just...
And it was like one of the fastest sketches I've ever done.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And it's not that I have, and I've struggled with sketches since then. And I think, you know, there are other factors going into it, but I wasn't able to approach it all the way with that mindset.
Yeah, I think the way we spiraled off on a lot of this stuff is we were going to talk about how to try and head off predictable failures, failing in a place where you had before succeeded.
Yeah, where the victories lead to complacency.
Yeah,
so
I don't know if we landed on anything with that.
Well, you talked about learning zone and panic zone. So we discussed doing the thing. So letting
enthusiasm guide you.
The enthusiasm and the things that are unique about that project, I think the ways that it's different than before, work for you. That was one thing that I thought was interesting that you brought, because I hadn't thought of that one.
Maybe one of the important things is just to sort of chase what you really are into at the time and not be afraid if that seems fickle from the outside somehow. Because you were talking to me about this yesterday. You said that, and I can't remember exactly how you phrased it, but like in my head, it was just basically like, you're really good at like greedily chasing specific ideas.
Oh no, I just said that like you had this tendency of like, you know, you'll focus on one thing 100% and then you can move on to another thing and transfer like the full measure of enthusiasm.
Yeah, but I think that it really is just like a selfish, like compulsive, like, oh, I just really like this, so whatever, I'm not going to pay attention to these other things. And maybe that's actually a helpful thing for this particular type of enterprise, where if you could just really be willing to throw away whatever. And again, maybe that goes back to, you know, Sam talking about being selfish with illustration.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you can really just find the thing you like in there and dig that out. And honestly, it's probably kind of what the client's after subconsciously anyway, because you sort of will tend to do that over the course of time in a way that these things you care about will rise to the surface of your body of work. And those are the pieces that, you know, you will kind of get known for, and they're going to want another iteration of that to some degree.
Yeah. I think a lot of it boils down to like knowing yourself, like knowing what interests you and also like knowing when you're getting bored of that thing and moving on to something new. So always being sort of eagle-eyed for something that you can bring enthusiasm to a painting through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One last thing I want to mention on there is that, you know, if you had lost this fight to this dragon, not fighting 100% several times in a row, that could have dampened your enthusiasm in a way where you would just, you know, you said you came back to the game after several months. I mean, what if you had just not come back? I mean,
yeah, that's true.
We both faced times like that in our illustration careers where you kind of are at the bottom of a well of where you lost, and this all relates to the confidence we were talking about earlier, and you maybe just don't even believe that fighting a new way can help.
Yeah, especially because sometimes it takes a couple tries for something to stick.
Yeah. I know that for me, when I get into that,
I should specify there, not trying the same thing that fails multiple times, trying a couple different solutions before you find the correct one.
Yeah, because you could just accidentally try the wrong thing and then, you're not going to get there either. And it's going to, again, depress you because you're like, I tried a new thing and I still failed.
Yeah.
But for me, I have a few touchstones that always tend to reinvigorate me. And it's a long process to get reinvigorated, I will say that. So you definitely go through these kind of like waves. But for me, studying study itself and learning about other people who have really achieved at high levels always sparks me, because it starts a cycle. So what happens is I'll be kind of down and I will just be sort of, I don't know what makes me do this, But at a certain point, I realized that this was always a really helpful thing, to the point that I put a reminder on my calendar to do it at set intervals, just to just read Peak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that book really is just sort of a little life Bible for me. And I'll read Peak, and then I'll just be so excited. I have all these ideas. Oh, I could break it. I could try it this way. I could try it that way. I could do this new activity, blah, blah, blah. And a lot of those things end up not happening. But what does happen is I'm enthusiastic about something, about anything.
Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, we talked about how life is kind of bubble wrapped in some ways to, you're mostly supposed to be enthusiastic about the things that make other people money. But is there some way to be enthusiastic about your very self?
Yeah.
You know, if you can find anything in the world that can make you excited about yourself, your own life in a way that you can just really get revved up, that will come into the art, and you can eventually turn that on, I think, because I get excited about training, and then I'll start some new training regimen, and then eventually I'll go, man, I've been doing all this training and not really using it. Let me just make a piece of art. And then I'll make a piece of art, and that piece of art is like a proof of a theorem that I've been working on for a few months. And then I'll make this new thing, and I'm just like so excited all of a sudden to really finally put this all this effort out into an image and or a comic strip or whatever the case may be. And maybe that's where like proof really comes in, if you can make some kind of tangible proof for yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a theory.
Know what you like. Know the kind of things that get you excited, and sort of immerse yourself in that. Apply that back to your art.
Maybe just give yourself permission. That keeps coming up in this conversation. But really,
yeah.
I think whenever I'm inhibited artistically, there's something that I'm doing that's not the native me, right? When I was focusing on money, it's because I got into this bad spot where I had moved somewhere to be with someone, and I was just attacking that relationship 100%. So like we talked about, you know, give everything, move across the country and to be with someone, which I'm so glad I did. But you throw other things out of balance, right? So I wasn't making enough money to actually live where I moved to. So I ran out of money, and that realigned my goals, because the goal was now make money. And that led to a depression in my art, because that's the wrong goal, to make good art.
Yeah.
Right? And making bad art depressed me further. So now I have not very much money, and the money comes in slowly, right? So you're not getting the feedback of money, and you're kind of betraying your core principles.
Yeah.
So when I really refocused and went, oh, I just, you know, need to let myself pay this debt back a little more slowly in order to facilitate things in my life, that's when I started to kind of come back a little, I would say. Mentally, at least, I could feel the difference, and it's slow. It's slow to sort of come back on. But yeah, if you can have something you really like that you turn to when the chips are down, maybe that's kind of the key word at the end of all this.
Yeah. Know what you like and think about what you can sort of throw yourself into when you really need to, like,
or even if you could just brainstorm what is the thing for you that will
when
you've been most excited to paint, what were you thinking about? What were you feeling?
Yeah. Well, like, what is your fighting the dragon? Like, what mantra do you have? Like, what sort of triggers that mindset in you?
Yeah. What can you use to like fully turn on?
Like, you know, thinking about different points in your life. Because again, like a lot of times people will experience this accidentally, and the trick is being able to do it on command and get that back.
Yeah. The future technique.
Yeah.
Showing up there where you fought in a way you didn't know you knew how, and then you're like, oh, I want that back, but you don't know how to get it again. And so, yeah, if you can point to any period where you were more productive, you were happier, even, is just important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or where you were really able to focus some object. Like for me, it's that book Peak, and also just love how paintings look. So one of the most important folders I keep is just my, like, it's called actually a soul folder instead of a goal folder.
Yeah.
So I keep this separate folder of images that I don't judge them based on how good they are technically. I mean, that plays into my perceptions because I'm an artist, but these aren't like held to the standard of, are they technically perfect? The only things in there are things that like I crave to look at.
Yeah.
I just really enjoy the experience of looking at them. I almost hear sounds when I see them.
Yeah.
And if I can look at paintings like that, that can kind of get me amped up too. So there can be all kinds of different things, a book, a movie you like, a video game you want to play, but let yourself enjoy and indulge in that thing. And if you really can, then.
And feed that back into your art.
Yeah. I think that will just naturally help.
Awesome. All right. Good talk.